Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest today is Christy Lascheber, and we're about to have a deeply intimate conversation. You can send your questions or comments to jx@jeffnet.org. Christy graduated summa cum laude from Southern Oregon University. She is a smart, attractive, gregarious, fashion-conscious entrepreneur, national speaker, workshop facilitator, and mentor who guides women on deep, soul-searching journeys to find their greatest purpose and manifest it in their lives. But Christy's own journey to who she is now took many twists and turns, which she openly expresses in her book, Perfectly Flawed, Uncovering Your Greatest Purpose. Welcome to the exchange, Christy.
Hi, Mike. Thank you.
Well, let's start with a simple question. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm here in New Orleans, and the weather is beautiful. The sun's out. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, I want to get your thoughts about steps toward admitting and addressing our personal flaws, as well as exposing and addressing the flaws in our system of warehousing humans. But first, I'd like you to read from the foreword in your book and then reveal who wrote it at the end.
Okay, sounds great. It starts as, I will always remember that fall Sunday morning when a dear friend approached me, walking next to a woman I had never seen before. Gina, this is Christy, and Christy, this is Gina, he said. I think you two should know each other. I think about that moment from time to time, and it still makes me smile. I wasn't aware that Christy had called my friend from prison, knowing he had moved to Ashland, Oregon, where she would be relocating when she got out. She asked him if he knew of a woman who could mentor her. And just like that, Christy and I found ourselves at the beginning of a beautiful journey. We connected in a 12-step program. I watched as my new friend bravely shared her fear out loud in front of the whole room and recounted the experiences that led her there. You could hear a pin drop. Christy commanded the room when she spoke, not because she was pushy, but because she was authentic and full of hope. Even today, that beautiful hope and authenticity are stirring up new friendships and opening new doors. Christy is a force in the world, and it has been my honor to mentor her. It wasn't an easy road for Christy. I recall her looking around her new community of Ashlands with a lack of enthusiasm and saying, "Why do I have to live here?" "You get to live here," I would remind her. Ashland and the wonderful people living there were the perfect recipes for healing and growth. Christy dug into the hard work and became deeply connected to her authentic self right before my eyes. It was pure joy to behold. When she was called to move to New Orleans, I knew I would miss her, but what a thrill it was to cheer her on as she continued her adventure. Some may think of this as a story about Christy. Well, it's not. This is a story about all of us who have been hurt and have flaws in all their glory. Each imperfection, each perceived defect and weakness has the potential to make us stronger. We all have the opportunity to get to know ourselves to our deepest core. And most importantly, regardless of the season we find ourselves in, we all have the power and the choice to remain teachable. If you are reading this, then you have one of the best gifts you could give yourself. Read this with an open mind, and you will be surprised where you will go. Christy has shared an intimate part of herself so that we can all grow into who we are supposed to be. And that was written by my mentor, Gina Duquesne.
Gina Duquesne, mm-hmm. Our Ashland City Councilor.
Yes, a wonderful woman.
And so your journey toward healing and becoming the person you are today from the person you were before happened right here in Ashland.
It did. Yes, it makes me emotional because it was such a special place.
So let's start at the beginning of your personal journey and work our way forward.
Okay.
As I read your book, which... By the way, I was halfway through your book before my wife forced me to put it down to go eat dinner. I could not put the book down.
Aw, I love that.
It's quite emotional because it's not just about, and Gina was right, it's not just about you. It's we're learning about ourselves through you. because right. you're so brave to expose all these vulnerable parts of who you are. And I thank you for that.
Thank you.
Well, let's start at the beginning of your personal journey and work our way forward. That starts with your childhood. Tell us about
it. Yeah, I had a wonderful family. I still have a wonderful family. And I grew up in Orange County, California. I was born with what they called birth defects at the time, which created me to be in the hospital a lot and have a lot of operations. So I kind of learned how to deal with emotions, or rather not deal with emotions, through Demerol and Dilaudid and pain medication. So I was smart and adventurous, and I was either in school getting good grades or have to get yanked back in the hospital or go to the beach and go back to the hospital. So that kind of was my life as a child.
Did you have a lot of friends? Did you move a lot, or were you pretty stable?
I was stable. We stayed in Fountain Valley until I was in the seventh grade or eighth grade, and then I moved to Laguna Hills, and that's where I stayed until I moved out on my own. I did have a lot of friends in Fountain Valley. I thought I would meet a lot of new friends in Laguna. I didn't realize it was going to be harder in eighth grade just because I had grown up with everybody from kindergarten on. So it was a little more challenging in Laguna to meet friends. But, you know, it's funny, I'm meeting with some friends that I've known since high school. All of us, a group of seven of us, are going to be meeting next month for one of our 60th birthdays. So I still have my friends from high school.
Excellent. Would you consider yourself having grown up in a middle-class family, upper middle-class, poor? What was the socioeconomic status?
I would say middle class for the most part. My father was a bartender at Disneyland Hotel originally, and then he started then he worked as a drafter, and then he opened his own cabinet shop and worked there for the rest of his life, starting from nothing, and he eventually did Kobe Bryant's house. So he was a hard worker, completely self-taught, self-made, and so I would say for the most part, it was a middle class and could be a little bit upper class towards the end there.
My guest is Kristi Lashaber, author of Perfectly Flawed, Uncovering Your Greatest Purpose. You can send your questions or comments to jx@jeffnet.org. Kristi, you went to college for fashion merchandising. You worked in fashion. You traveled. You married. Your husband became a county sheriff. You were living the life that some women dream of. What happened?
Well, that's the interesting thing. You can see the type of life a woman is leading and be envious of that, but really we have no idea what goes on behind closed doors. We have no idea what they're struggling with. And I think those of us that are extra resilient, which I believe a lot of women are, there's always something else that we're struggling with, but we push past that, but not necessarily heal from it. So at the same time, as I said, I was I became addicted to opioids. Every time I left the hospital, I was given massive amounts of pills, and I just thought that would be my life. I would work and go to school and go to the hospital and take pills, and then one day I realized I was taking it way too many, and that it was more of a crutch, like an addiction, and I got pulled over by my husband's sergeant, and I decided to go to rehab, and I did that and learned what it would be like to have a sober life, and so from there, I was sober for a long time, and then just a lot of chain of events happened for me to not tell anyone what was going on and manage my emotions, and I relapsed while I was in the hospital. I had my father pass away from cancer. My husband was having an affair I didn't know about while we were in the middle of adopting, which was crushing. And so there was a bunch of things and I didn't manage. So even though I had sobriety, I realized I had to go deeper to have the emotional sobriety, to really love everything about myself.
Well, you found another relationship after your marriage ended. Tell us about that.
Well, this was a man I had known as friends, and when he found out that my relationship was ending and my father was dying, he reached out and we became really close. And he was also someone that struggled with addiction, and he had relapsed. And at the same time, I was in the hospital for a kidney problem, and the nurse offered me a pain shot. And at the time, I remember so specifically, I was by myself. My father was dying. I thought, I just want a little bit of relief. Like, that's all I wanted. No one would know. I would not go down that road again. So I said yes. And as soon as I said yes, I knew that was going to be a big mistake. And at the same time, the person that I was seeing had relapsed in Palm Springs, asked me to come help him get out of his situation. And I did. And then in my mind as an addict, I thought, if I try some of this that he had tried, he didn't know that I had tried it, then that would stop the opioid addiction, which I was very fearful of, but I would never get addicted to this drug, which was methamphetamine. I thought, there's no way I would get addicted to that. So let me try this to stop this. And that's what I did. And it did stop the opioid addiction, absolutely. But it also led me on a path of just wanting more, just that addiction, you know, with the drug. And that's what happened.
So you flipped from opioids to meth.
Yes.
How did you end up selling drugs, and then to a Catholic priest of all people?
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting that there's a lot of people that do that are, that sounds kind of silly now, but as an entrepreneur at heart, so you couple being an entrepreneur at heart, someone who is addicted, and when you're doing drugs, like, I had my own wardrobe styling business for many years that I loved. That tells you how powerful drugs are. So it's like the devil. It has you by the throat and it won't let you go. So the person that we had got it from said, well, you can buy a little more, and then I have someone you could sell it to. And so that started on that path. And someone had said, I know this guy in Connecticut, not knowing who he was, and he wants this amount, you can sell it to him and you can get yours for free. And that's how it started.
And so you and your companion ended up selling drugs. What kind of drugs?
Yes, methamphetamine.
And for what length of time?
It was several years.
And how did it come crashing to a halt?
Well, because the priest was also addicted. He was selling, and this person that I guess he had sold to, I think maybe they had been in a relationship with, actually, told, I guess he was raided in another situation and told on the priest, and there was an undercover that sold to him, which they found us on wiretap.
I don't know what wiretap is.
Meaning that they tapped his phone, so they found us through the fact that the police tapped the priest's phone.
Okay, we have about 60 seconds before we have to take a break. Can you describe the moment that you and your friend got caught?
We were in a hotel room in Las Vegas, and I thought the maids were being kind of loud in the morning, but it was actually the marshals, and they came through the door screaming, yelling, where's the guns, which we had no guns, and we got laid out on the floor and got sent to Las Vegas prison.
Okay.
It was a nightmare.
And what happened when you first arrived in prison?
When I first arrived, I believe my body kind of shut down. I had never experienced the feeling of, I think it was so overwhelming that knowing what was happening, that my body just kind of shut down, and I ended up in the hospital for a week that I don't really remember very much of it.
You were telling us about an arrest, and now you're off to prison. How long was your sentence, and what was that experience like being in prison?
I eventually got 60 months in federal prison as somebody who had never been in trouble before. I had only brought my husband lunch when he was working in the jails. It was a horrific experience, as you can imagine. I was in five different prisons. They take you on a plane, which they call Conair, to different prisons. I was in Las Vegas, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Oklahoma, and eventually in the maximum security prison in Texas because it was a supposed medical center. So I got to see, of course, behind the scenes of what really goes on in the prisons and the trauma and the violence that is inside. And, you know, I was shocked that I was there. I was who I thought that I was and where I was, and the way they treated me was so different. So at one point I thought maybe it's better if I'm not on this planet, because I can't believe I hurt my family the way I did. And what is wrong with me? I have opportunity, and here I am in this, in these prisons. And it was excruciatingly painful, but eventually I, maybe with a year left, I decided to write a lot. I just wrote. I went to church, you know, and at first I thought, I'm not going to find Jesus in jail. That's one of the things I wrote in my book. I'm like, that sounds terrible. But then I realized it's more like my highest self. So I got to learn about Christy and why I got there, and give myself a, you know, wide berth of grace and understand humans a little bit more.
Tell us about the time that you were told you were flawed.
Yeah. It was an interesting moment. I was in a drug program called RDAP, a residential drug program, and it was known in this particular facility to not graduate people. And people would say, they're not going to graduate you, you're going to get kicked out, because if you complete this program, you would get another year. And so I said, well, I'm going to do it no matter what. And I was in a room with other women, and someone had said something, well, you're a flawed human being. And I immediately turned around, like, irritated. I said, no, I'm not. And then I thought, that's weird. Of course I'm a flawed human being. So I was so defensive against being, you know, what was human, I thought bad. And I think a lot of women inside think, you know, think of themselves as bad rather than just a flawed human being. So that was really one of the reasons I started to write as well. Like, why would I think that?
So in your book, you help us see the inside of the prison system through your lens. If you could wave a magic wand and our criminal justice system could change in one major way, what would it be?
Well, number one, I would make sure that there's education inside. They have the ability for people to get their GED if they don't have it. Other than that, that's about it. Although now it's Pell Grants are going back into the prisons, even though it's an extremely slow process to get that in. But I would first say education is number one. And then not only higher education, but also trauma-informed education. So you learn about yourself. And also I would make it so that there's not more trauma and violence that is ensued inside. And I would make it more like a healing place rather than punitive.
Healing. What positive steps in people did you experience in this hidden system and through your reentry journey?
Boy, the positive steps, trying to think, if there were any inside, it would only be from the chaplain that I really leaned into. He was such a nice person and in such contrast with the harshness inside. Also, the people that would come in from the outside of church, they would come in and sing, and they would just, like, I would hear a beautiful song a cappella from a lady that would come in, and I would just cry. It was like it soothed my soul. So that was the positive things inside. That's the only positive inside. And then outside, I was really lucky enough to be involved in a reentry court with federal judge Ann Aiken. And it was a 1 year, you would come once a month on a Friday for the day and talk about your month and how are you doing. And it was a super kind of what I was saying, how it would be nice if it was that way inside, just a kind of loving, supportive environment. And that was, and still is, a huge factor in my growth right now.
My guest is Kristi Lashaber, author of Perfectly Flawed, Uncovering Your Greatest Purpose. You can send your questions or comments to jx@jeffnet.org. So what I'm hearing you say is that certain people were positive in your experience.
Yes, those that had a spiritual background, yes.
So the horrors of this system are inflicted by people.
Yes. 100%. In fact, the most horrible thing I've ever heard in my entire life was from the lady that ran the drug program. And she said to me, when she called me in her office, after she kicked me out for being inauthentic, I had to do another year. There was only two of us left out of the whole group. And she called me back in her office, and she's knowing I couldn't have children. She said, Kristi, thank God you couldn't have children. You would have been a terrible mother. She said, I bet you're a terrible daughter and a terrible sister. Now get out of my office.
And these are the people that our taxpayer dollars are paying for.
Yes. I mean, what woman would ever say that to another woman? There's times I'm like, do I really hear that? Like, because it's so unbelievable. And when I went to appeal that decision, you have to fill out all the paperwork and all the forms. It's a strenuous, really hard process. And they denied me because her husband was in charge of the whole region of the drug program.
Okay. But you did make it through. And
I did.
Mm-hmm. You came out on the other side, and a judge befriended you.
Yes.
So that's a human being in the system that is positive. And then you met Gina Duquesne, our city councilor.
Right.
And she became your mentor.
Yes, still is. I just talked to her this morning.
So what are some of your core daily habits that contribute to your well-being and capacity today?
Boy, I get up probably about 2 hours before I have to work. And during those two-hour time, I will go on a walk. And I did that in Ashland, too. I woke up, I went on a walk to be outside, get the fresh air, or run. And then I would write, and I still do that. I write every morning, no matter what. And I read like a little devotional or something that is filled with positivity. It's one thing is called Opening Doors Within, which is just kind of like explaining or kind of telling you what you deserve, which is beauty and grace and love. And I would write that out every morning in first person, like, I am this, I deserve this. And so just to get that to seep into my body. And
so you're like your own best cheerleader.
I am, because you know why? I had the best cheerleaders. Gina was my best cheerleader. She just poured so much goodness and just so much quiet love, which you know, people a lot of times when they're giving advice, so you need to do this, you should do this. And, you know, I would cry and I said, God, I hate crying. And she said, She said, crying is just an emotion like laughing. You wouldn't tell yourself not to laugh, would you? I said, yeah, that's true. So now I repeat the same phrases. Gina has no idea. Her phrases are going out into the world all across the country now. But I had and still have amazing women and men that pour goodness into me, and which allows me to do that to myself and others.
And there was a positive experience with another institution, Southern Oregon University.
Yes. Yeah, I went to Rogue Community College. I had an amazing experience there. And I was afraid when you're coming out of that darkness and pain and abuse, it's scary to be on your own in this big wide world. And I had lost everything. And the judge is actually the one that said, well, why aren't you in school? You're smart. And I thought, oh, I'm too old for school. And she told me all the reasons why I wasn't. And so I did, but I was afraid to open that first door into Rogue Community College. And the response that I got was so amazing. And I think that's what I want to say about people coming home. The response the community has really makes a difference. The lady that was doing the financial aid, you know, I had a little stomach ache because I had to tell her where I was. And I said, you know, I was in prison. And she looked at me and she said, oh my gosh, you're going to be so great. I mean, she could have said a million different responses, but that, I believed her, and it still makes me emotional. I was like, I am. And it just went on from there all the way to SOU. The president, Linda from SOU, was fabulous with me. And, you know, just I really got amazing people put in my life in Ashland.
Just a path of cheerleaders along the way that cheered you on, supported you on, and now you're on your way. What projects are you working on that you're excited about today?
Wow. Well, I'm working on continually making sure that the criminal history box on college applications are removed. We did that in Oregon, and the governor signed that bill into law, I think, in 21.
Good job. Congratulations.
Thank you. I didn't know how to do it, but of course I thought, well, I'll ask people because people will always help you. And so we got that law passed. And then now I work at NASFA, which is the National Association for Student Financial Aid. And I work in the prison education program department. So just providing education and so that colleges and universities understand and not be afraid of someone who is in prison, just understand how to do that and who these people are. And that's why I talk about it, because, you know, when I first got out, I wasn't going to share. I thought, I'm moving to Ashland where my mom and my sister are. I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to just put my head down and work. But sharing little bits of my story really connected me to this greater, you know, community of women that have never been to prison, but also a lot of times have their own, you know, prison mentally. And so I just realized that, you know, I went so far down right above the ground of death that it just helped me be brave to continue to share. So I wrote a second book, which was a journal, because I believe writing is so important. And I just encourage women and do workshops for unraveling self-worth and that kind of stuff.
You have become a cheerleader for the community that you were once a part of.
Yes, it's the best ever.
What do you wish every person knew about themselves?
Boy, I wish that they knew that they had immense power and that how they were born may be different than other people in your family, and sometimes even the people that love you the most can't mentor you into the person you were meant to be. And so I think, and I'm learning that now, I'm 59, I'm still learning, even though it's still, I have a wonderful family, that who I am, all the things that I didn't like about myself, I thought were too adventurous or too whatever it was, that's who I am, and that's how God made me. And so I get to live in that fully, which is pure freedom.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you for being open, transparent, and vulnerable with us, Christy.
Thank you so much, Mike. I really appreciate you.
My guest was Christy Lashaber, author of Perfectly Flawed, Uncovering Your Greatest Purpose.